It's time for Power Hour.
I love your energy that you bring every day.
The IrishSportsDaily.com podcast covering the Fighting Irish throughout the year.
You know why I love it? Because you love football.
Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription.
This is a football family.
And now, your Power Hour host.
The guy has a lot of ability.
Mike Frank.
All right, folks, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. I'm here with both my co-hosts today. Jamie is done cleaning up the disaster that was his plumbing, so he's back with us as well. And then, of course, Matt Freeman, the basketball genius here. We're going to talk basketball to get the show going first and talk a little hoops in the tournament and what we can expect there and what it all means for Notre Dame. Also talk some spring practice as well after the basketball coverage. But first, I want to mention, once again, everybody, sign up for IrishSportsDaily.com. We got a great special that's going to last probably a couple more days. It's $19.99 from now until August 1st. So basically, a little over 4.5 months of coverage for $19.99. So it's a great time to sign up for IrishSportsDaily.com. You can go to the front page and take advantage of the special there. Also, if you have any questions, you can hit us up on the Huddle, which is our free message board on Irish Sports Daily. You can go to the forum section there and scroll down to the Huddle. Ask us whatever questions we have. We're always there answering them for anybody who has any questions about the team, recruiting, any of that kind of stuff. So stop by there. We'd greatly appreciate it. Also wanted to mention once again, if you want to advertise with the podcast and kind of get your product out there to a bunch of Notre Dame fans, feel free to email me at mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. mikefrank18@sbcglobal.net. Our rates are reasonable, and I think you'll like what we can do for you in that regard. So, all right, guys. Well, let's start off with the tournament. The seed, I don't know, a number five seed. I don't know. I really feel like Notre Dame got disrespected, in my opinion. You know, there really wasn't any team in the Big East that dominated Notre Dame. It wasn't like they had a bunch of teams they lost to
the
twice.
ACC.
Yeah, or I'm sorry, the ACC.
That's how big of a fan Mike is.
Yeah. I keep getting my I get screwed up with this new conference stuff. So, but anyway, there's not really anybody that dominated Notre Dame in this. You know, it was kind of a split run for pretty much every team that they faced and in the conference. And then they get a number five seed, even though they go all the way to the title game, played Duke very, very tough. Probably could have won the game, played well enough to win. And a number five seed. Matt, do you just think that people don't respect Notre Dame basketball? Is that what you think it is?
I think it's a little bit of that. I think they're still working on that traction to get to the next tier where they do get a little bit of benefit of the doubt when it comes to seeding and stuff like that. But, I mean, I never thought Notre Dame would be a three seed. I thought maybe they'd be a four, which the four and five play in the second round anyway. So, I mean, there's not really that big of a difference in terms of that. And then obviously Notre Dame fans have to be happy with the draw that Notre Dame got because they match up well with pretty much every team in that bracket that they could end up playing. So, it's more about the draw versus the seed. And I know I can understand the frustration of some Notre Dame fans, but they got a beautiful draw for what you want this time of year in March.
I think, we'll talk about Princeton here shortly, but and I think the problem that they have more than anything is everybody just knows they're not very big, So even though they deserved more respect, I think a lot of people think, well, they had a nice season and everything, but when push comes to shove and they start playing in this tournament, they're not going to have the size to compete. Even though, they've competed with all the ACC teams very favorably and athletic teams, some teams that got a lot of athletes and quickness And so, Notre Dame's been battle-tested. I just feel they got disrespected. I really do, and I feel bad for Mike Bray. Like you said, it really doesn't matter in the end. They ended up with a fairly good draw, I thought, as far as where they're at. Princeton, I think that's a good matchup for Notre Dame. I don't think they have the athletes. They're very similar to Notre Dame. And I just think Notre Dame's players are superior. And you know, Notre Dame doesn't usually beat themselves too much. And that's the type of team that, that Princeton would take advantage of. And I really think Notre Dame should win that first game. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they won it by 10, 15 points in the end.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, they look pretty similar. They're both teams that like to shoot the three and make it at a high efficiency. So, I mean, that could be an exciting game in itself if both teams are hitting threes. But, I mean, Princeton has a little bit better defensive stats on paper than Notre Dame, but that's also just they're not playing ACC competition every for the last 3 months. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, I think Princeton's probably just a very solid team. I'm not going to lie, I haven't watched a Princeton game mm-hmm. all year. So I'm just basing what I've read so far, but
I'd be in that group too.
It sounds like they're not a team that's going to beat themselves per se, but this is a game where Notre Dame will have the better athletes and the better team. So, I would expect them to win, but that 5-12 matchup is always exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you never know what's going to happen on that one. That's for sure. I think the second game could be the tough one, especially if it's West Virginia. I don't think people have any idea how good a motivated West Virginia team is, especially if they can hit their threes, and they are difficult to beat. They're one of the only teams that has beat Kansas twice this year, and I mean that's a good basketball team. I'm telling you, if they are focused and they can hit their threes, that defense is tough, and people don't realize how tough that is to play. And you know, Notre Dame doesn't have a huge bench to draw to, and that's usually the thing that kills you when you're playing a team like that, is you just run out of gas towards the end. And you know, when you look at West Virginia, heck, they'll play 10 easily, and you know, maybe even 11 or 12, depending on how things go. So it's an interesting matchup, and that's the one that I think is a little bit scary for Notre Dame. You know, as they get into that second round, if it is West Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, I think Notre Dame would have to be concerned with a little bit of depth, but I mean, it's sure as in terms of talent across the board, I mean, Notre Dame matches up well with them. And, I mean, Notre Dame definitely has enough ball handlers to handle that full-court press that Huggins loves to play. So, I mean, I think it would be a close game, but I'm not sure that it would be a huge problem for Notre Dame, just as long as everybody stays out of foul trouble.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll see how that matches up. We'll see how it ends up. If they make the Sweet 16, then they have to play this. Well, that's it, provided that Gonzaga actually gets that far. I'm not sure they will. But, man, you're going to be in a world of hurt in that round if that happens. What's going to happen there?
I mean, it's going to be a great matchup. I think if that matchup does place, I think it'll be one of the greatest one-on-one matchups at point guard between Matt Farrell and Nigel Williams-Goss, because, I mean, those are two of the premier point guards this year. So that'll be fun. I think Notre Dame would have problems just dealing with Gonzaga's size down low. I mean, they got 3 7-footers and 2 6'10" guys that they'll be able to throw at Colson and take him away from the basket, because four of them can shoot the three ball. So it'll be a little bit tougher of a matchup for Notre Dame, but I mean, as long as they're hitting their threes, I think they can play with anyone in the country. So
that's the size, you know, the size that they have. Gonzaga is the thing that really, I think, keeps them going. They got so many bigs in there that it's tough to, you know, especially if you're a penetrating guard, it's tough to get in there, you know, and play amongst the trees. That's going to be an interesting matchup if Notre Dame gets that far and Gonzaga does, because I think Gonzaga is a talented team. I'm not sure they're the greatest athletes in the world, but I do think that they're very difficult. And they got those big guys can shoot, man. And it's that they are a very tough team.
Yeah, I mean, just in doing some research on Gonzaga,
gee, imagine that.
This is a little bit different than the past teams, because Gonzaga's weakness has always been they weren't athletic on the perimeter, but they finally, after 10 years of just not having it, they have those bodies at this point. And I think that could end up being the deciding factor on whether they make that run that Mark Few's wanted to make for so long, just because they finally have those athletes now.
Now, you know, if Notre Dame does get to the Sweet 16, you know, they win their first two games, to me, I think that's a great season for Mike Bray. We were talking about it at Toscana's on Friday. I remember we were talking in October, and everybody's like, man, this team's going to stink. You know, a lot of people thought this team was not going to be very good. And then Mike Bray once again pulls a rabbit out of his hat and does a tremendous job. Good team chemistry on this group. Seems like when a lot of people don't expect him to do well, a lot of times he has his best season. And that's a sign, I think, of a good coach. I think it's a sign of a guy who understands that chemistry in college basketball is a big, big part of it. And I think that's why he's had so much success. If he gets to the Sweet 16, you know, and he plays Gonzaga tough, is this a big season for Notre Dame basketball? Does it move the needle at all when you're talking about, Matt, like guys who are interested in Notre Dame? You know, can that maybe bring in one of those high four stars, you know, maybe even a five star that says, you know what, Notre Dame's really played well the last 4 or 5 years?
I mean, in terms of your first question, I think if they do make a Sweet 16, it's kind of like what you said. It's nothing short of a little miracle, just considering they don't have a consistent big man. And, I mean, who would have thought Matt Farah would have played this well? So, I mean, that he's maxing out the talent on his roster and figuring out ways to win. It might be by the skin of his teeth, but, I mean, he's getting the job done. But in terms of recruiting, I'm not sure that it'll move the needle at all. I mean, Bray's kind of focused on a certain type of kid at this point, and I mean, DJ Harvey is probably at least a 2-year player, so I mean, I don't know if they can find more DJ Harveys, but I don't think they're going to get that elite talent just because he's going to be a one and done. So I'm not sure that it'll have any ramifications other than maybe getting a 2 or 3 year player.
Yeah, I think that that's what it is. Notre Dame's going to struggle to get that one and done guy. And to be honest, I'm not sure how interested, you know, really even Notre Dame's administration is in playing that game. You know, as far as let's get a 5-star guy that's going to push. But I do think you can get some 4-star guys that are kind of elite guys that are going to stick around for 4 years. And I think that that is really Mike Bray's next step, is trying to get those mid 4-star guys that you know, just need a little bit of development. Maybe it's body, you know, maybe it's just in their game somewhere, defense, offense, whatever it may be. But just getting that 4-star talent that just needs some development and getting them over the hump to being a consistent team that can challenge, you know. And I think when we're talking about, you know, the talent that they have, I mean, I think Mike Bray has done a wonderful job. I mean, when you think Bonzi's like, what is he? Is he really 6'5"? I mean, you know, it's probably 6'5", but that's about it. You know, he's not much taller than that. And he's in there playing with those guys and doing a heck of a job. And so when that's your guy, I mean, that's amazing what they've been able to accomplish this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it is, especially when you combine who Bonzi's played against this year. And
yeah,
I mean, he's had success. But I mean, back to recruiting, I mean, if Notre Dame was close with Jarrett Allen, who ended up at Texas, the 5-star center, and he averaged 13-8 this year.
Yeah,
I mean, if they would have got him, I think that would have kind of changed that dynamic of the outlook of where you see this team could make a run at this point in the year. So I mean, they're close, but I'm not sure they're ever going to get that type of player to kind of put them into the Final Four contention prior to the tournament.
Let's get Jamie in here and his vast basketball knowledge and just ask him a few questions. That way we can laugh at him, if nothing else.
Jamie, what do you think of Notre Dame's 2-3 defense?
I'll pass on that one.
No, but seriously, Jamie, I mean, let's look. Right now there's a lot of teams playing pretty well. And you know, there's 4, 5, 6 seeds, guys like that, that are out there that I don't think a lot of teams want to face. If you're looking at it, Jamie, can you name a couple of teams that you wouldn't want to face if you were coaching them in this tournament?
I wouldn't want to face Arizona. I think Arizona. I think they're the best team in the Pac-12. And there, I don't know, maybe it's just the old West Coast to me, but I watch more, out of all college basketball, I watch more Pac-12 games than anything else. And also I enjoy Bill Walton a lot too. So, but
you, wait, you enjoy Bill Walton.
I enjoy Bill Walton.
I think he's the worst announcer in the history of basketball.
I'm not surprised that you feel that way.
He is awful. I mean, there's honestly, all he does is argue.
Is Irish Sports Daily going to have drug testing from
now? Yeah, exactly. We need some drug testing.
I don't know. I just get a kick out of him. But
yeah, he's a nut job and doesn't say anything about basketball. He just argues with the play-by-play guy
and talks about weed.
Yeah, and talks about weed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Why did we even ask his opinion?
I like watching Arizona play. I think they got a lot of talent. They're a team that, in terms of athletes, I think there would be a team that I wouldn't want to play. I think Kentucky. I mean, I know I'm just picking like high seeds, but Kentucky to me, every year they always have the talent. I think Malik Monk is probably
freak
like,
show.
Yeah, he's probably my favorite guy to watch. Out of all the young guys who are going to the NBA in the next year, that's a team that I like to watch a lot, and I wouldn't want to play if I was coaching against them. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's about it. I mean, I don't know. I don't want.
Matt is laughing uncontrollably over here.
Jamie's just picking the national powerhouse.
Yeah.
Well, what am I supposed to take? Wichita State? I haven't watched them once.
They are the number 8 RPI team.
Yeah. All right. So Matt, your thoughts, name some teams you wouldn't want to play right now.
I mean, I would agree on Kentucky. You just don't know what you're going to get out of that team, which is probably the frustrating thing for Calipari. Just he could have one of the best teams in the country one day and then one of the worst teams in the SEC the next day. So if he gets those guys playing right, no way would I want part of them. The UCLA-Kentucky potential matchup in the Sweet 16 is very interesting because I think likely the winner of that game could go on to the Final Four, but because they match up well with North Carolina. Yeah. But, I mean, outside of that, I mean, there's no real team that just scares me as a fan of college basketball. Obviously, Kansas, Duke, and Villanova are playing pretty good ball right now, but, I mean, I don't see them as head and shoulders above anybody else.
You know, I've watched Michigan recently, and I don't know how good, because I don't know how good the Big Ten is.
It's
you know,
horrible.
I just don't know. But when you watch them, you're like, wow, they're really starting to play well. And they're playing with a lot of confidence. They're a team that I would be a little bit concerned about. There's two Big 12 teams that I think are very dangerous, and that's Oklahoma State and Iowa State. I personally think Iowa State wins that game every time. And to be honest with you, I'm worried about Iowa State as a Kansas fan. In that game, I honestly am. That is a team that is shooting the ball really well. And I'm telling you, when Iowa State can hit their threes, they're almost impossible to beat. I'm telling you, that is a very good basketball team. Matt's shaking his head. But we'll see.
Great Big 12.
I'm just telling you, I've watched a lot of the teams this year, and that team can flat play.
Actually, another team I wouldn't want any part of is Florida Gulf Coast. I mean, they play Florida State in Orlando, and I'm sure that's Florida State's not happy about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, that'll be one of the must-see games of the first weekend.
All right, Jamie, we're going to start with you. Your pick for Final Four, who you got?
I took Villanova, UNC, Kansas, and Arizona.
That's almost like a slight at you, Matt. Basically, every number one seed but Gonzaga.
The only one seed I didn't take was Gonzaga. I told you, I like Arizona.
All right, Matt, your thoughts, your top four.
I have a top three. I have put Villanova, Louisville, Arizona, and then I don't know who the hell comes out of the South. It could be North Carolina, UCLA, or Kentucky.
Yeah.
If I'm a betting
Matt
man.
Matt didn't even take Gonzaga.
You didn't?
If I'm a betting man, I'd take UCLA.
Yeah. It's interesting. I got Villanova, Arizona, and UCLA. I actually think that those three are going to make it that far. So I actually did pick two Pac-12 teams. It's that KU situation because I just don't know whether they can get by Iowa State. If they can, I think they can beat Louisville. But I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to pick Iowa State. They're just playing really well right now. So I'm going to pick Iowa State to get in the
Your boy Frank Mason's going home early.
I know, and that's going to crush me because he's such a warrior. But I just have a feeling the way Iowa State is shooting the three right now and shooting the ball and playing with confidence, that's going to be a very difficult game for anybody to beat them. So that's my picks, and I know I'm crazy, but that's what I went with. So now let's move on to Notre Dame football. I sat here and I thought about this for a while. trying to figure out what I felt was the best situation. But two practices before spring break, does that make any sense? What do you think, Matt?
I spent some time thinking about it, too, after some of the board debate and everything. But I think it's good. Just you get those two practices in where you don't have pads just to kind of get everybody back into the flow, and you can kind of press them mentally just so that their mind's on football. And then once you get back, then you can go into hitting and stuff, because there's an adjustment period once you start putting the pads on because you're sore. You don't want to go through that twice.
Yeah.
So I think it's an advantage of just them just getting those two pointless practice, not pointless, but two yeah. practices without contact and everything just out of the way before everything kicks in.
All right. Yuyama, what do you think on this?
I think Matt actually brings up a pretty good point about the no pads and them kind of like getting into it. I know a lot of that, those first couple practices are going to be install stuff too and get guys just running around, just a little bit of competition. That's it. So in that sense, I guess it's not that bad, but I mean, I do think you lose momentum when you go to the break. You know, guys are obviously not focused on what they were just learning. I think, you know, some guys will come back and pick it up fine, but there'll always be some who won't. And, you know, you don't want to have to rehash stuff. You want to keep moving forward the whole time. I don't know how they would have done it in terms of the schedule. They would have obviously had to compress the schedule a little bit after, but I think it would have been a little bit more ideal if they did, you know, find a way to work those practices in after spring break. But I mean, that's the way it is, and they got to just kind of deal with it now. But I mean, it's not the end of the world that they did that, but I mean, I don't think it's preferable for them to do it.
I see both sides of it, and I've been kind of on the fence, but I think the one thing that people don't really, I guess, factor into this is the accountability issue. And, you know, Brian Kelly gets to have two practices with this group and talk about, you know, what is important. And when you go down to, you know, South Padre or you go down to Miami or any of these places, you want it in the back of their minds that, hey, you know, that there's a bigger picture here. And maybe they make better decisions when they're gone. Let's be honest. Brian Kelly hasn't had a clean slate where something bad didn't happen with people doing stupid things, you know, for a long time. So I think just having that ability to get in their ear and say, look, you guys have worked your butt off. You know, you did everything that we asked you to do. And this is going to pay off, but it's only going to pay off if you're eligible, if you're here to play and you're not doing something stupid. So just having the opportunity to kind of remind them that, hey, look, you know, don't do something dumb. You know, just we got a season that we got to play for. This is why you're here. I realize everybody wants to have a good time. Go have a good time, but just don't do something stupid. And I think just having those 2 days where they get to go with install, like guys kind of get an idea of what to expect when it comes back. You know, they didn't know what Elko would coach like. They didn't know what Clark Lee would coach like. Now they get to sit and think about, you know, for a week, you know, in between, you know, beer bongs and, you know, all this other crap, in between all that. But they get a chance to kind of think about, oh, man, you know, I need to make sure that I'm going to impress these coaches. And, you know, that way they just, I think the accountability part of it was a bigger factor than people realize. And to me, I think that was a smart move because of it after thinking about it for a while. Let's start with you, Matt. Anything surprise you from Brian Kelly's two press conferences? Did anything he say really kind of stand out to you?
I wouldn't limit it, or I wouldn't specify one specific statement or anything, but his candidness kind of stuck out to me. He was a little bit more personal than he had been in the past, and I mean, I think it's probably by design. Just like that SI article was most likely coming from Notre Dame's end.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, I think he's doing the little things now that he wasn't doing before. And I think that's the most important thing, whether he tells you every little thing that he's doing or if he doesn't tell you half the stuff that he's doing. But he's doing those things now, and I think that's the biggest thing. But, I mean, overall, in terms of his entire presser, I mean, he avoided singling out players doing well in the offseason, and I thought that was kind of out of the ordinary for him, just because he's normally excited to get in there and tell you who's gaining weight or who's making progress, and he specifically didn't single out anyone. So I think that was something that stuck out, but, I mean, other than that, I didn't really get too big of a different takeaways.
I think the reason he didn't single anybody out, I call it the Corey Holmes factor, yeah. You know. Last year, he says Corey Holmes runs a 4.3, and everybody thinks, oh, wow, here's this guy going to be great, and then all of a sudden he didn't. I think what he was trying to say was, hey, look, this kid worked hard, you know, did a good job, showed up ready to go. Hopefully he's going to be a guy for us versus, you know, oh, he is a guy.
Yeah.
So I think that sometimes it puts some undue pressure on. I think that's part of it. You mentioned, first of all, I think that he took a lot of arrows, and I think he took a lot of ownership, and I think that that's important. I think that it's important for his team to know that he's blaming it on him, and I think he builds some credibility with the team. And then as you mentioned, he talked about, well, now I'm out there at the 5:30 practices and I'm out doing this. And to me, I think that that's really important and needed, because you can't ask a guy to sacrifice for you. You can't ask a guy to give you everything that you want him to give you without giving something yourself. And I think just, you know, this is Brian Kelly's accountability, saying, look, I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not willing to do myself. And I think that that's been a real positive thing about it. I think he's kind of rebuilding trust, rebuilding relationships with players, and trying to bring back the fun to Notre Dame football. And I think that that's very, very important. Other than that, there's a couple other topics we'll talk about that I listed down here later that stood out to me. But those are kind of the things that really stood out to me. Jamie, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I just think the one thing about, the morning workouts, the fact that he's never gone to them. Not that he didn't go all the time. The fact that he never went, that was kind of surprising to me. That he just... I mean, I guess it was good that he admitted it, right? Like Matt said, he's very candid. But that was kind of shocking to me. But, I guess if he's making the changes and he's showing up all the time and, being accountable to the 93 guys that he had the interviews with after the season, I think that's a good thing. I think just, you know, overall, I think what surprised me more than anything was just that it kind of seemed like, all the changes seem like it was actually, it wasn't just talk. It seemed more real because of all the way he was talking about it. And the message, and, you know, maybe that is just a message that he's portraying to the media and, you know, they want to get that out there, but it really doesn't do Kelly much good in terms of, his perception, looking at a next job. For him to say, oh, it was all my fault, right? So in that way, it kind of gives me confidence that he wants to stay at Notre Dame and that he really is bought into a long-term, investment at Notre Dame for him personally. And that's a good thing, especially with all that talk that, he was looking for the next job. If he was still looking for the next job, I'm not sure if he would be putting all the 100% the blame on him, because that's probably not helping him in terms of the perception for the next job.
Well, you also got to win in order for somebody to want you for a next job. So I Definitely. Think that that's the big, big part of it. He's got to win. But I think, you mentioned it's like there's talk and then there's action. And I think he's shown action, really a lot of action since the end of the season. You know, we put a poll up on Irish Sports Daily on the members board. You know, what's your grade? What do you give him after the season? And I gave him a B+. I thought, maybe pretty close to an A. We'll find out, as things unfold. But I think he's done a fantastic job with a lot of the things that he's done. I think that there's still some stuff left to do. I mean, when we find out that they still don't have a graphic designer. Well, that guy's been gone for what? Or that person, the woman, I think it was a girl, wasn't it?
Well, they have a guy doing it now, but, I mean,
he's not a full-time person.
Well, it is full-time, but he's just, there's no way that a school like Notre Dame should have one graphic designer. Mm-hmm. It's absurd.
Well, and they don't have an intern right now who helps them with stuff. They don't have social media. You know, these things have been gone, you know, since December.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are things that need to be addressed. And I'm sure that they're trying to get all this stuff filled. I know that they put some, positions up trying to fill them. But, gosh, you know, you can't put all this pressure on everybody else in the office to pick up the slack. Sooner or later, these things got to be taken care of. So, hopefully, those hires will get taken care of and they'll get some people in those roles. And I hope it expands. I hope we see more people involved. You know, for all the criticism of this and that, you know, I think when Brian Kelly goes and says, hey, I need something, Swarbrick usually follows up and says, okay, well, let's get that. If that's what you need, we got to get him that. And so hopefully a few more positions will be created to help in the recruiting part. I mean, they've done a fantastic job being completely, you know, one arm tied behind their back. You know, when you consider how many offers have gone out, they got to direct all this. I think they've really done an outstanding job, with Mike Elston and Dave Poloquin and Carney. I think they've all done a great job of you know, getting this thing going really with one arm tied behind their back. So, but anyway, I think that Brian Kelly's done a really good job and owning it too. I think it's so important that he had to own it and then also put your money where your mouth is. Show up. You know, if you're going to ask your team to sacrifice more for you, you better sacrifice more for them. And I have to give Brian Kelly credit. I didn't think that he would go as far as he has. And so I got to give him a lot of credit for that. I really do. One comment that really kind of stood out to me was, and he was pretty adamant about it, was the fact that he said, look, you know, whenever we've had success, we've had one guy doing the offense. That's it. One guy. So that means it's all on Chip and I'm out. And I thought, wow, that was a pretty bold statement. I was really surprised to hear that. Do we believe him? Do we believe that that's the way it's going to be? And is that a good thing? Jamie, we'll start with you.
I do believe him, especially because of the way he kind of said that. And I think you do, you know, in kind of like your own self-scouting of looking at what's been successful for you, you look at what has worked for you in the past. And, you know, that obviously worked for them at Cincinnati. But because it was him who was doing that, there is that sense that maybe he will get involved again. But, I mean, with all the other reflection based on the feedback from everyone else, you know, it doesn't really make sense for him to do that at Notre Dame. Maybe he could do that at Grand Valley and Cincinnati, but not at a place like Notre Dame. I think I buy into it as long as, you know, I'll wait and see when the going gets tough in the season and adversity hits, you know. So if they're 2-1 and they lost to Georgia in the opening month of the season, and all of a sudden they're playing Michigan State and have to drive down the field and in the fourth quarter and score to avoid being 2-2, is that the kind of thing where, you know, Brian Kelly is going to be able to say, oh, you got this, Chip? I don't know, right? So that to me is, we'll see how that happens. But as for now, like, I believe that you know, he is giving Chip Long and controls in practice right now, and I think it'll, you know, in Temple and all that will go, but, you know, let's see what happens when the adversity strikes.
Matt, you got any thoughts?
I mean, I'll take it in a different direction in terms of just the one day that we saw of spring practice. I think that Kelly is kind of doing exactly what he said, because, I mean, Kelly was with the defense for almost the entire time that we were there. He wasn't coaching per se, but he was observing what Clark Lee was doing, what Elko was doing, what Mike Elston was doing, and then he was giving words of encouragement to his guys. So I mean, if he was not gonna do what he said, then he would have been on the offensive side of the ball, working with the quarterbacks, working with the receivers and stuff. So I think he's just probably wants to get a feel for his new staff too, but he's holding those coaches accountable on the defensive side of the ball too. So in terms of what he's doing and what he's actually doing, I think that he's following through with his message through the one practice we've seen.
Well, I think it's smart too. you want to give Chip Long the opportunity to do what he can do, right? And I'm sure Brian Kelly would be checking on it, but he also knows that, hey, look, if we don't get better on defense, it doesn't matter what we do on offense. So focus your time over there. Make sure that what you're hearing from the coaches is what you want to hear. You know, make sure that you believe in what's going on, that type of thing. And be over there for the defense so they understand that, one, you believe it's important. Two, you're there to help. And three, you know, you're there to make sure that they're getting the quality coaching that they should get. And so I would not be surprised if we see Kelly stay out of it most of this spring. Just kind of watch and see what happens. Review the film, make sure that they're doing the things that he'd like to do on offense. It's more where I worry about is, you know, in the off season when they're getting ready to game plan and they're getting ready to do things. I think that he'll probably stay out of that too for most of it until, like Jamie said, when it gets to the point where, oh man, you know, we got a score here to win. Will he stay out of it at that point? And I don't know the answer to that. But I do like the fact that it seems like he wants to give Chip Long the opportunity. And I think that that's the best thing that can happen with this offense is if he did do that. And that's not to say that Brian Kelly's a bad coach or he doesn't know offense. It's just I think that for this group of players, they need to be focused on the running game. They need to make sure that they don't put too much on their quarterback's hands. And, you know, when you got two first-round picks on the left side of the offensive line, you've got guys like Mustafa, who could be a, you know, mid-round pick, maybe even higher than that. Certainly Alex Bars has the potential to do that as well. You've got potentially a superstar at whatever that other right tackle, you know, could be. You've got a lot of talent there. You should be very good running the football if you are committed to it. And so to me, I'm hoping that he holds true to that, and that's what we'll see. Now, the other side to that is we now have Tommy Rees, kind of green, doesn't have a lot of experience. How much do you think he'll be involved in the quarterback room, with the quarterbacks, coaching the quarterbacks? Is that a good thing, Matt?
I think he has to keep his eye on it. I mean, he wouldn't be doing his job if he wasn't, just with Tommy's inexperience and just how vital the quarterback role is that this year. I mean, I think Tommy can handle the job or they wouldn't have hired him, but at the same time, I think Kelly is going to spend some time there in practice and in the film room just to make sure Tommy's hitting all of the marks. I mean, you're not going to hire a first-year quarterback coach and then just not check in on him. So I think he'll follow up with that. But like you said, with the offense, I think once the season gets here, I think that's where you're going to kind of see where Kelly devotes his time. And I think that'll kind of be more answered then versus now.
Jamie, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it kind of everything we've heard from Kelly and what Matt was saying at the practices as well is that it's more of a CEO type approach where he's kind of, you know, taking account for everything. And to me, that makes the Tommy Rees hire a lot more surprising, given that happened, because obviously that gives you know, Rees a lot of free reign, and it kind of goes against everything we thought about that hire in the first thing, because we all just assume, oh well, Kelly's going to coach quarterbacks, and you know, Tommy will be there to kind of be the buffer in between, and now it seems like Rees is going to have a lot more responsibility than we originally assumed. So I think to me that is a little bit, not, I don't know, concerning is not the right word, but it's going to be something that is worth watching for the next little bit, obviously, because, you know, this is going to be Brandon Wimbush's first year. They're going to need to develop Ian Book and Avery Davis when he gets on campus. And, you know, I do think it's overall, it's the right thing for Kelly to, you know, like Matt said, go around and hold all his other coaches accountable. You know, I would just worry that, you know, how much is he going to be forced to spend more time with the quarterbacks because of Rees' inexperience? And you know, if he's doing that, then, you know, are other things going to fall off? So, I mean, I don't know that it's going to go that way, but it's definitely something to watch for me, because we really don't, there just isn't enough of a track record for anyone to say that, you know, Tommy Rees is going to be fine handling the quarterbacks this year.
I think it's all going to depend on Brian Kelly's demeanor. And I say that because, you know, we've seen Purple Face Kelly, and he gets angry, and that's good and it's bad, you know, depending on who you are and what it is. You know, and I think a lot of Irish fans mistakenly say, well, Rees handled it well. He's one of the guys who could actually handle it. Well, I think he handled it well in the fact that, you know, he didn't walk away. He showed maturity. He listened. He did the things that he needed to do. But I wouldn't say he played any better because of it. You know, I don't think that Tommy Rees ever really got much better. I think he just kind of maximized what he could do, and then really just wasn't much better as a player from really the you know, the first season all the way through. He was pretty much the same guy all the way through. So I think Brian Kelly, if he's going to get involved in the quarterbacks, needs to manage his own personality and how he addresses them. And we've seen countless examples of guys just, you know, starting well and just slowly crumbling under the mountain of pressure that he puts on them. And I'm not saying it's just him. I think that just the job itself, the magnitude of the job, you know, wears a guy down too. It's a very, very difficult job. And when you're not winning, it's really difficult. And so I'm not just, you know, I don't want to single Brian Kelly and say, well, he's, you know, he's the reason all these quarterbacks sucked, or, you know, I shouldn't say sucked, but, you know, the reason they didn't play well towards the end of their career. And I don't want to say that that's the case. I think it's a big part of a lot of different pieces that come into play there. But I do think he's part of the problem, and I think that you have to look at one common theme as to why that has happened. And, you know, they've had countless quarterback coaches, same result. Well, if that's the case, then what is the common theme there? And so I think Brian Kelly has to adjust maybe the way he approaches this, and I think he's smart enough to figure that out. I think we got to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's figured out everything else. So it's going to be interesting to watch him, Matt, coach in spring. You know, how does he handle Brandon Wimbush when he does things poorly and makes bad decisions? How does he handle Ian Book when he does this? And those are going to be the interesting, you know, side stories that are involved in spring practice that I'm going to be paying attention to. Now, one thing that I thought from the interviews was Mike McGlinchey gave a very interesting, you know, interview, I thought, Matt, with just all kinds of detail about what's gone on since the end of the season. And you could tell just in his face, I mean, he wasn't lying. You know, he was saying there has been a 180 degree change as far as people's attitudes, their work ethic, what they're doing, and then said, you know, Bayless is a godsend. And I mean, when you watch the video, you can see, you know, you can usually tell when somebody believes what they're saying. He believed that. Should we believe that? Or do you think it's, you know, speak at this point? I mean, I don't know what to think on this, but I believe that he believed it.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a standpoint of when you hire someone new, they're always going to be better than the old guy. Yeah. I mean, in 99.9% of the cases, there's going to be excitement just because there's change. But if you look at it, the mindset of the team has already changed in 8 weeks, where you have guys that are believing in what Bayless is preaching and what he's teaching. And obviously that wasn't there before, but I mean, whether he's just kicking them in the ass or they're just seeing the results of that hard work, that's building a confidence on the team, and that wasn't there. And I mean, if they don't get stronger, if they don't get bigger, if they're playing with confidence, I mean, that's a win in itself. So, I mean, they are getting bigger and they are getting results in the weight room. So if they can combine that with an added confidence, I think it's working. So, I mean, at this point, there's no reason not to believe him just based off of what him and other players have said.
Yeah.
I mean, Greer Martini said the first workout was the hardest workout he's had in 4 years at Notre Dame. So,
yeah. Well, and he also said that for the first time, he wasn't tired after practice,
yeah.
You know, which is, I thought, very interesting. So we'll see whether any of this actually means anything in the end. But I just liked hearing it. And I More than it, hearing it, I liked watching McGlinchey's face because you could tell he believed it. And that I think, is more telling than whatever he says. So, Matt, what about the things that stood out to you from the first practice? Anything that kind of really stood out to you as you were watching?
Well, first off, you got to start off with Brandon Wimbush. I mean, Kizer has a big arm, but when you watch Brandon Wimbush throw the slant, it's
big arm.
A different world.
It totally is.
He's got some velocity on that sucker. The second thing was probably the new GA they hired, Tyler Stantucci. He was coaching the linebackers, and he was coaching them hard.
Yeah.
I mean, he was with Pulling. Pulling was working with the linebackers, and Stantucci was just on those guys from start to finish when we were there, kind of taking the lead role as Clark Lee worked with. They split the linebackers up, so Lee was with one group of backers. But, I mean, that guy knows his role, and he's obviously comfortable with Lee and Elko's teaching methods and their drill work, and I mean, he was after it. And then another thing that stood out was running back's size, just as a unit. All those guys are
big.
I mean, yeah, it's an impressive looking group. And then it was obviously good to see Sean Crawford out there. Kelly said prior that he was running and jumping, but just seeing him out there doing it, it was just good to see a kid that's gone through what he's gone through just back out on the football field. He didn't do any one-on-ones from what I saw, but just in the drill work, you could tell that he was getting there.
Yeah.
There's no reason to push him at this point. But the only other thing I would say would be fundamentals. They were doing a lot of fundamentals. Granted, it was without pads, so that's basically all you can do. But there was some drill work that they hadn't done before, and just watching some of the videos that UND was there when we weren't, they were doing some different tackling methods and stuff like that too. So, I mean, that's kind of what stuck out to me in the first 30 minutes of spring ball.
I'd say tempo, you know, especially offensively, they did made a tremendous focus on tempo. Got to go fast. Everything's fast. The other thing, you know, they ran this, what I call, fast tempo run drill. Did it for a whole period. Hadn't seen that from them at all. Where basically it's 11 guys and they're lining up and it's just like, let's snap them one right after another. Run, one, one, one. Just keep going. And I think that one snaps into their mind, hey, there are going to be times where we're just going to do this. And you got to get lined up and get right back on where we're supposed to be. And then two, just kind of getting everybody in the mindset that, hey, this is what we're doing. This is we're changing this, and we're focusing on it. So I like seeing that. Elko was a little louder than I thought he would be. You know, he's supposed to be. A lot of people talk about his positivity, but you know, he was a little louder, and I think he's trying to get attention. You know, almost Van Gorder loud. You know, I don't think that's really his coaching style, but I think he's trying to get attention. But that surprised me a little bit. I noticed you mentioned Wimbush in his big arm, but I thought he was pretty accurate for the first day. You know, now when we watched, I guess really even as a true freshman, he looked really good throwing, you know, one-on-ones. It was when it was 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 that he struggled. So that's going to be the real test. You know, when there's other guys out there, a whole group of defenders, and he has to make real reads on that. How good is he? And that's really going to be the difference. So that's what I can't wait to watch. But he's certainly bigger, too. His lower base, I mean, he's added a lot of weight in his lower base. And so he should be able to take some pounding that I wasn't sure that he would be able to take previously. But I really like the size that he has on his lower body, and he should be able to take some hits there. A couple other things stood out to me. Brock Wright was more athletic than I thought. He's pretty darn good already. You know, out of all the tight ends, I thought he and Alizé were probably two of the more athletic guys that we watched out there. And, you know, he's 250 right now. Yeah. So very soft hands. I think he had one drop I saw, but moved very, very well. Didn't look out of place. So that was encouraging. You mentioned Crawford. And, you know, just seeing him jump. You know, they were running the sideline drills where they go up to try and catch the ball, you know, and stay in bounds. And I thought, wow, they're letting him jump. I thought that was very encouraging sign. And then Javon McKinley did everything. You know, I was surprised. I mean, he was doing you know, all the drills, you know, competing in one-on-ones and moving well. I thought, wow, you know, he's a lot further along than I anticipated. And then the other thing that kind of surprised me, but then Kelly explained it a little bit later, was Asmar Bilal as the rover. I knew he'd probably get a look there. But as he said, hey, we're going to play some teams that like to run the ball the first couple games, and we got to make sure we got somebody there for that. That made sense when he said that. So whether he sticks there or not, we'll see. But I thought that was interesting. You know, I really did. The other thing, you know, that Greer, you know, more – I didn't watch the defense, but it looked like he was the first-team guy at Buck. So –
yeah, I mean, I would just not take anything on defense set in stone right now other than Drew Tranquil and Jerry Tillery are going to be on the field and Nels Morgan's going to be at linebacker. Other than that...
yeah, we don't know what to expect. Yeah,
anyone's guess.
Yeah. Now, Kelly said he wasn't overly concerned about depth chart, first, second, third string. Is that a good idea? Do you want your starter, you know, kind of entrenched fairly early so he can kind of focus, especially if it's a defensive guy? He can focus on learning the defense and knowing what to do. Does that make sense to, you know, keep it open and keep that competition going all through spring? To me, it sounded like when I was talking to, or, you know, when I wasn't talking, but when I was listening to Kelly, his biggest thing is he was not pleased with the compete level. And that's why I think that this is about not having a depth chart to be concerned about. Is he wants everybody to know that, look, this is not about, you know, who's the best player right now. I need to find guys I can count on. And to me, I thought that was encouraging. I liked hearing that. Jamie, do you have any thoughts on why that might not be a good idea?
Well, I was going to say that I do think it's a good idea that they're doing it, but I think it could be not a good idea for the reasons that you said, Mike, in terms of learning the defense and, you know, getting guys enough reps. And there's always a drop off between there's a huge drop off between the third team and the first team. And, you know, sometimes guys, for some guys, their compete level goes down when they're with the third team because they think they're being snubbed.
Yeah.
But often the time that kind of weeds guys out, because if they're not competing at that certain level, then they're probably not the kind of guys you want there all the time. They're not going to compete all the time. So, you know, in that sense, it's not the worst thing to do that either. But I think I'm all for the competition. And I know that, Matt just singled some guys out in terms of the guys that you know, you expect to play, but really there really isn't any, you know, there aren't too many guys on the entire roster that I think have earned, like, hey, this is my spot. And, you know, no one's going to take it. Cause, you know, I mean, they went 4-8 for a reason, right? There's very few guys that played at a really, really high level last year. And I, you know, I think you could, there's a handful of guys on offense too, that you could kind of pick out. And then I think too, because it's a mostly new staff, you want to reward guys that worked hard in the off season, the guys that maybe made the most gains during, you know, winter conditioning and, you know, working with Bayless and all that. So, I think it's okay. And if guys weren't maybe working up to that level, then yeah, you should, I don't want to say punish them, but they shouldn't be rewarded for it. They shouldn't be with the first team if that's the case, and they need to work their way back up. And if they don't work their way back up, then, you know, and those other guys stay there, then I mean, that's just how it works, right? It should be a meritocracy at all times. And I think, you know, eventually you hope by the end of spring that they're starting to figure that out in terms of like the ones and twos. But I mean, I don't even think it's a bad thing if they don't really get it all settled out before spring. You know, if that goes into camp in the first couple of weeks of camp and that before you get it all figured out, that's fine too. As long as you know that guys are invested in the meeting rooms in stall, they're picking it up. Then I think you're fine.
I completely agree with you. On defense, the only guy I would say that is a starter right now for me, if I'm looking at it, is Niles Morgan. Everybody else, I think, is, you know, up in the air, and that includes Tillery, that includes everybody, because I until I know a guy's going to give me everything he's got, he's not a starter for me. I don't think that question is anything about Niles Morgan. I think he's committed, shown that, is a high-quality player. There's nobody they have that's better than him. He's committed. So I think Niles Morgan's the only starter I would anoint on defense right now. And offensively, I think that number is not very much higher either. McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, those are the two I'd definitely say probably deserve it. But, I mean, guys like even EQ, I'm not sure. I think he will be. I think he's earned the right to be a guy that we know can do it. But I want to see a little more commit level out of him, a little more compete level out of him. Same thing with Sam Mustafa. He did a lot of really good things and looked and performed really well in a lot of areas. But still, I would want to see some improvement from last year to this year before I'd say you're the guy. And after that, I can't think of anybody that I would say definitely should be the starter other than Wimbush. And I'm not even sure Wimbush has earned it, but he's got far more experience than Ian Book does at this point. So I think that's a default situation. But that's the way I would look at it, and that's why I'm kind of glad to see that Kelly's saying, hey, look, this is open season right now. Anybody can win the jobs, and I like that. Did either of you buy Kelly's explanation as to why Kevin Stefferson was number three on the depth chart? I did not.
Nope. I think there's some truth to it where you want to see some guys at different positions, but you probably want to see Kevin Stefferson at a different position too, just to see what he can do with some different lineups. But I think KJ has a little bit of ways to go to get out of the doghouse, so to speak. But it's one that he can get out of because he is talented. So
yeah,
I wouldn't worry about it too much right now.
Well, I don't think it says much other than, look, you might not even be here if things don't change and you don't focus more on what you need to focus on. So at the end of the day, I think the kid's a vastly talented kid. He's got so much potential. And I think he just needs to kind of get his head squared on straight. And if he does, he can be good. But I think that was definitely a shot across the bow of the SS Stefferson, in my opinion. So now this is maybe a tough question because we haven't watched spring, but I don't know. Do you see this as a roster with top 10 talent, top 15 talent? Where do you think it is right now, Matt?
I would say it's definitely top 15. I mean, obviously, offensively, they should be able to play with anyone in the country. And then on defense, I mean, that's kind of why you're paying Mike Elko the big bucks, is just he's figured it out at every stop he's been at. So, I mean, you just got to give him time, whether it's 6 months or even till next spring, just to implement his system and give him a chance to just work with the roster a little bit. I think the defense is going to be a little bit more timely, but I think there is talent there. They definitely need more of it on the defensive line, but, I mean, there's no reason why they shouldn't compete with top 15 programs in the country.
Jamie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's top 15 is about right. But there's a lot of teams that are and programs that are in that range. And I think what makes them kind of less than or more than that, or whether they can be a top five team or a top 10 is if they have enough individuals that can elevate to a certain level. So is Niles Morgan going to be an All-American type player? If he can be that, then, that helps them get to that top 10 level. If they have a couple more guys get to that level, then I think that's the right way to look at it. But I'm not sure if unless we see that kind of leap from those a few specific players, then I wouldn't have my hopes up for them to be a top five team, but definitely a top 15 overall, just in terms of the overall roster. I think they have more than enough talent.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. It's can those guys who have potential to be elite players actually develop into that? And if they do, then they climb up the board. If Niles Morgan becomes an elite player, they climb up a little bit. If if you know Josh Adams and Tony Jones Jr. And Dexter Williams take that next step, that certainly will help. If Brandon Wimbush develops quickly, that'll help. EQ develops, Kevin Stepherson develops, that certainly helps. You know, defensively, I like the DBs they have. They got talent. It's just, can they get them to play well enough? And I think, you know, across the board, Julian Love, Dante Vaughn, Troy Pride, Crawford, you know, athletically, that's a group that's got a lot of talent. You know, safety with Elliott and Studstill. You got two guys there that can be great players as long as they remain healthy. I like the linebackers, you know. I think that Notre Dame's got potential at pass rush if they could just physically get a little bit better and technique-wise, which is a huge part of it, you know, can get a little bit better. So I think that, you know, top 15 is a good number right now, but they could climb into the top five if those guys all of a sudden start to develop like they should. And if you have good proper coaching, you'll see that. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think the top 15 talent's definitely there. Jim, I wanted to ask you, since you're a defensive lineman and you know you've been through the wars and stuff, how much do you think a Scott Pagano would add to Notre Dame's season this year? I don't think he's going to be any sort of sack master, but I just think, for me, it would be a huge addition. But I want to get your thoughts on it because you played the position. You understand it a little bit better than most people. But how much of an addition do you think that it would add to Notre Dame?
Oh, I think it would be huge. First of all, I don't think you can play with just one nose guard. You know, you can't rely on just one guy to play the majority of the snaps all year. It's just a position where the guy's just going to wear down by the end of the year if you have to rely on someone too much. And I think you saw whenever Notre Dame had injuries there and then, you know, they only had like one guy that they had to play the majority of snaps, the level of play went down quite a bit, you know? And I think that, you know, they're going to need not just Daniel Cage to be there. They need someone else to play with him. And, you know, and there's still some questions about Cage and whether or not he's can play at that level. And if he can't, then, I mean, they would desperately need Pagano. And I think Pagano, you know, I think that he's not, I mean, he's not going to come in and be an All-American. I think there's, you know, probably maybe a little bit too much hype in that sense in terms of the amount of teams that want him. But it just shows that there's those kind of guys are hard to find. He's a guy who's really strong at the point of attack. You know, when they played Notre Dame a few years ago, he did a really good job against Nick Martin, got under his pads quite a bit and, you know, did a really good job kind of like stuffing the middle of the field there versus the inside run. So I think he can make a difference. He's not a guy who's going to be like not overly productive in terms of tackles or tackles for loss. Not a guy who's going to get a ton of sacks or anything like that. But a guy who can hold up against the double team, kind of cause the inside run to bubble out, kind of make life easier for everyone else on the roster. He's the kind of guy that could make Niles Morgan and the other whoever's playing Buck, Martini or Coney, much better players because of what he does, right? Kind of the uncredited stuff. So I think it would be absolutely huge if they landed him. And I think with the way the depth chart is at One Tech right now, I think they need him.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the thing. He will add so much in the run game, you know, stopping the run and commanding that double team, keeping guards off your linebackers, and that's really what he's going to bring. But more important, I think you're going to have a highly, highly motivated guy because he wants to get to the NFL, and he's played championship-level defense, and he knows what it takes to do it, and I think that will make a huge impact on the guys that are playing there with him. They'll see the kind of effort that he plays with and the kind of tenacity, and I think that will raise their game as well, especially if they want to get on the field. So it would be absolutely huge if they can get him. I don't know how it's going to unfold, but hopefully they can land him, and it would be, I mean, that could be, he could be the difference in two wins. He really could be. That's the kind of impact that he could have on Notre Dame. All right, guys, last question for the day. What answers do you think Brian Kelly needs to have answered by the end of spring practice? What do you think he has to know by the end of this? Matt, we'll start with you.
First off, I think he has to know what Chip Long can handle. If he's in control of the offense and everything's implemented and in a good spot in 13 practices, whatever it is, I think there's a confidence that Long will be able to handle that responsibility in fall camp and heading into the season. If not, then, I mean, I think you might see Brian Kelly head back towards the offense in that direction. So, I mean, I think that's the first thing. And then just the second thing would just be the compete level, as you always talk about, just making sure that competitive nature stays there through all of spring ball. I think that's the most important thing in terms of where this team needs to go, just because that wasn't there last year. And I think that'll go a long way into just developing that quality depth across the board.
All right, Jamie, your thoughts, you got any?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that stood out to me from the previous season was DeShone Kizer I believe it was right before the season, or maybe it was right at the beginning of the season, where he said the team didn't have an identity. Like, their identity was they were split personality or something like that. I can't remember the exact quote he gave, but I think that's obviously was a bad thing, and it showed on the field. And I think that at the end of this spring practice, I think that he's going to have to know what the identity of the team is. And that's going to have to be established early. So if they figure that out in spring practice, that's for the best for the team going into the summer and going into the fall. And then that kind of changes things in terms of where they kind of know where things are. Even if the depth chart isn't kind of figured out by that time, they know what they're going to be. And which is another reason why you implement the captains earlier and stuff too, because you have an idea of who your leaders are and what kind of style that they can lead and what they're good at and what they aren't good at. So I think you have to figure all those things out in spring and kind of get a baseline, an outline of kind of where you want to be and what you are. So you can go into fall and into the summer and into the fall and know this is who we're going to be come September, because you don't want to go into August and being like, I still have no clue what kind of team we're going to be. You have to have an idea of that. So hopefully by, the end of April here, he has a pretty good idea of who they are going to be as a team.
All good points that you guys bring up, and I think that they're all valid. I mean, there's certainly things that he'd want to know. You know, does he have starting interior D linemen that he can count on? Does he have starting safeties that he can count on? And I think those are two very pressing questions that he wants an answer to, and I don't know whether he can get it. But, I think that those are important to know. Does he have those players? And if he doesn't, he's going to have to figure out a way to manufacture them in the offseason, and that might be possible. But I really think that those are really important questions for him. Another one that I don't think a lot of people think about is, can Ian Book play? Because you're one injury away from Ian Book being your quarterback. And so I think that that's going to be very important to find out if Ian Book, can you count on him? Because I think that also impacts what you said, Jamie, and that, what kind of offense are we? If you're worried about Ian Book being your guy, if Wimbush goes down, then you're probably not going to run Wimbush a whole lot because you're concerned about what happens if he does get banged up. And so I think Ian Book and how well he develops is going to be very important to Notre Dame's offense this year, and they got to make sure that they get him coached up and ready to go so he's a quality option come fall. I think you need to have a number two wide receiver at this point. You need to know whether it's going to be, Stefferson, or it's going to be a guy like Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin. We know EQ will be one of the guys. He just will, because he's just that talented, has the confidence, has played. So we know he's going to be, but I think you'd like to have a number two receiver that you know is kind of going to be a guy that you can count on and work with in the summer and kind of get some chemistry between quarterback and those guys. And then finally, I think, and this is important, and I don't think people realize how important it is, but, is Stefferson, is Alize Jones, are they in? Because so much of your offense is going to be designed about if they're ready to go and they are ready to go and they're in, focused and doing the right things, that's really going to determine, I think, a lot about what you're going to do offensively next year. So you know, they got to make sure that those two guys have their head on straight, because they're two of the most talented weapons they have. And it's just really important that they get them mentally ready to go and make sure that they're eligible and everything's good to go for the fall. And as long as that's the case, then they could be really outstanding players for Notre Dame. So, all right, folks, that's going to be it. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week when we hopefully talk about two big Notre Dame wins and Notre Dame heading into the big matchup with Gonzaga
in San Jose.
Yeah, what do you think of that? Hopefully we'll be able to talk about
it. Hopefully we'll get credentialed for it.
Yeah, well, we may, but I'm not sure anybody will be there covering it. But anyway, I do think that that's going to be exciting. We'll have that to talk about, and then of course spring will kick back up after next week. We get Wednesday, right, and then we have Coaches Clinic, so there's Friday, Saturday we get access
PJ
as well.
PJ Fleck coming to South Bend.
Yeah, and PJ Fleck will be there, so Matt will... I don't even want to talk about what Matt will be doing.
So, you don't follow up with that.
Yeah, I just left that one alone. That's kind of like your problems with the plumbing. I just leave it alone.
I know. We don't need to get into details.
All right, folks. That's going to be it. I hope you enjoyed the show. Once again, if you have questions, stop by the huddle. Great time to sign up for Irish Sports Daily. Stop by there, $19.99. Give us a shot. I think you'll really like it. I think you'll really like our message boards. We do a really good job of keeping things sane over there and a lot of good discussion. So I think you'll really enjoy it. $19.99 from now until August 1st. Sign up today. That's going to be it. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
This has been Power Hour, an exclusive production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Don't wait. Sign up now for a premium subscription for IrishSportsDaily.com for year-round recruiting news and Notre Dame coverage. For more on the Fighting Irish, visit IrishSportsDaily.com now. And to listen to archived Power Hour podcasts, visit iTunes.
That's a good one.
Power Hour, exclusively on IrishSportsDaily.com.